Hi everyone, I'm Jessica. This is actually a co-presentation. This is Haley James. We did this together. So we're actually going to talk to you guys today about the process by which we started an ophthalmology clinic in Norfolk, Virginia for the underinsured and underserved. So the data we collected was over the course of how we decided that we needed this clinic and how we started this clinic. So that's kind of the frame of reference for this. We're both third-year medical students at Eastern Virginia Medical School. So we have no financial relationships and no disclosures. We pay people for our education. No one pays us. Before we get started, we want to thank EVMS. They've been incredibly supportive of everything that we've done. We've also worked closely with Lions Club International, specifically Lions Club of Virginia. Everyone here, these individuals have supported us both monetarily for us to travel here to talk to you guys and with their time, expertise, and their connections. So we thank all of them. Without them, this would not be possible. So before we dive into our clinic specifically, we want to talk to you guys a little bit about vision care and problems that individuals have that cause vision loss. So glaucoma is one of the big things that everyone thinks of when you think of chronic vision care. So glaucoma is, glaucoma is painless, and a lot of times symptoms don't show up till very, very late in the disease. This makes it particularly dangerous because individuals who are not educated and don't know to look for symptoms don't notice symptoms until incredibly advanced disease. And one of the significant things about glaucoma is that any vision losses are permanent. They're irreversible. There's nothing you can do once you've lost that vision. So it is the second leading cause of blindness worldwide and the leading cause of irreversible blindness. So diabetic retinopathy, something we deal with more and more nowadays as the type 2 diabetes population percentage is rising. So this is the leading cause of blindness in working age adults. And similar to glaucoma, early stages have no symptoms, which make it very dangerous. Macular degeneration is the leading cause of permanent impairment of reading and close-up vision among adults greater than 65 years old. So again, early and intermediate stages have little to no symptoms. Cataracts are the leading cause of blindness worldwide overall and the leading cause of vision loss in the United States specifically. They can occur at any age, but about 17.2% of Americans over 40 have cataracts. So glaucoma specifically, we have these risk factors listed as well as an example of what someone's vision would look like with very advanced stage glaucoma. So you can see this is a very advanced stage, but you can kind of imagine how this could happen gradually and you wouldn't really know. How often do you really assess how great is my peripheral vision? It's not something you think about every day. You could get a very, very impaired visual field without even realizing it. It happens all the time. So the major risk factors here, African American race, age, family history, and hypertension. So this is what it looks like if someone was having advanced diabetic retinopathy. So the risk factors here, kind of intuitive, diabetes, significantly impacted by glycemic control and duration of the disease. Also here is African American race, along with hypertension, pregnancy, and hyperlipidemia. So this is also something that you might not notice. A lot of times all of us we'll have floaters, things that float across your vision, dark spots, you don't think anything of it. You come out of a bright light into a dark or dark into a bright light and you see spots and you don't really think about it. Someone could have a loss like this and adjust for it and not notice it being there. For macular degeneration, our risk factors are age, family history, Caucasian race, obesity, smoking, and hypertension. So this is a little more obvious and a lot of times we get patients realizing this sooner than the other problems, because it's right in the middle of your vision, central vision loss. For cataracts, our risk factors are age, diabetes, extensive sunlight exposure, smoking, a family history, hypertension, and long-term use of steroids. So, like our others that you don't really notice, you could slowly fade across your vision and not think anything of it. You could think your glasses aren't up to date, you'll get around to fixing them, you'll get stronger readers. Things just go on longer without you realizing that there's a problem. So the cost that all of us bear for poor vision care is the fact that it's a $50 billion per year cost worldwide for preventable vision losses. So the key there is it's preventable. All of this money is spent, and we don't need to be spending it because these are all preventable losses. So there's also a loss of productivity that costs those with poor vision, and it's estimated at $267 billion per year worldwide. Also, kind of an indirect cost of poor vision care is the fact that 59% of road accidents are associated with poor vision. So vision loss is one of the top 10 disabilities, and it greatly decreases quality of life. As you can see by our last bullet point here, it corresponds highly with comorbid conditions. So you can't directly measure all of the costs of poor vision because it's a multifactorial problem. All of these comorbid conditions cost just as much, if not more, than the specific vision loss. So this is kind of our key point here, is that the way that we can help make this better is early intervention. So early detection and treatment can prevent many cases of blindness and vision loss. So with 80% of the world's blindness being preventable, that's a huge point where we can intervene. This is the key spot. This is what we need to do to make this cost less, to make this hurt less people, to make more people have an increased quality of life. So one of the ways that we can do that is by having a cost-effective method of screening for diabetic retinopathy. A lot of people who have diabetes know they have diabetes. A lot of people who have diabetes for long enough to have diabetic retinopathy are well aware they have diabetes. So the problem there a lot of times is these patients are not aware that their diabetes affects their eyesight. So that's a key way that we can intervene, because 2/3 of diabetics get recommended for screening. That's not 100%. There's room for improvement. Also, cataract surgery is incredibly effective. We can completely eliminate the problems caused by cataracts by just removing them. Early detection and treatment of glaucoma can stop vision loss and control the disease. Treatment of glaucoma is incredibly effective, same way we treat cataracts. You can have surgery, you can have drops. It really changes the course of the disease and decreases the effect on the patient's life. And the problem here is that up to half of those with glaucoma are not diagnosed.
So in our community in Hampton Roads, there are a lot of issues that you might see in many larger cities. We've got residents who are at a higher poverty level. There's a higher incidence of African American race in the population and a lower average household income. This presents a lot of issues with access to care and being able to afford services. So our school came into play by starting the Health Outreach Partnership of EVMS students in 2011. It started out with primary care and women's health clinic and has now expanded to include dermatology, orthopedics, ultrasound, mental health, and now with what we started this year, ophthalmology. And so we used the clinic patients to sort of survey them to see if this was even a necessary thing. Did we need an ophthalmology clinic? Is there a need for eye care in this population? And so just starting with some basic demographics and looking at their history of recent eye care, whether they're wearing glasses, and looking at history of chronic diseases, as Jessica discussed, that have an effect and can play a big role as a risk factor for cataracts, glaucoma, those sorts of things, like diabetes and hypertension, and looking at family history, since we know that also plays a role. And what we found over the 12 months that we did this screening.
3 months. 12 weeks.
We had screened 143 unique patients. And in our population, we have 70% African Americans, and 70% of those are over 40 years old, which is important because glaucoma tends to hit at an earlier age, about 10 years earlier. In this population, there was also a significant history of chronic disease, with 19% having a history of diabetes and 60% having a history of hypertension. Also, a significant family history of chronic eye diseases, 22% with glaucoma and 38% with a history of cataracts. And so that confirmed that this was indeed a high-risk population, but now are they interested in getting care? So 74% of those surveyed did want an eye exam, and many of those who said no had either recently had an eye exam or were some of the young, healthy women from our women's health clinic who aren't really looking at getting an eye exam at this stage in their life. And 74% of our patients with diabetes were overdue for an eye exam by the American Diabetes Association guidelines. And so this is a population with significant risk factors, significant trouble with access and affording things. And in Norfolk, there's just not a lot of options, low cost or free options. There's the Park Place vision screening, which happens once a month, has trouble getting physicians to come. And so sometimes these patients show up and wait for hours and no physician shows up, so it gets rescheduled. And then eventually, if that happens enough, they stop coming, and so they fall through the cracks. But we also can't do dilated eye exams there, and it's just basically to get glasses to these patients. And it's recycled glasses through the local Lions Club. They do a lot of great work. They're filling a gap, but they're not able to take care of everyone. There's also the Lions Center for Sight at the major hospital in Norfolk, at Sentara Norfolk General. And they can only do a certain number of free surgeries. It's about 10 a year. It's ridiculously low. But there's also a significant waiting list to get in to see them. Just yesterday was November 1st, so they're now scheduling people for February, and there's a very long waiting list. And so there's definitely a need for another option in this community. And so we set up our clinic within the overall framework of HOPES, where we do senior and junior clinicians, with the senior clinicians being a third or fourth year medical student or second year PA student, and junior clinicians being a first or second year medical student or first year PA student. And so they see the patient as a team, work them up doing a focused visual history and physical exam, and then present to the attending physician and sort of go over the plan. The physician also will go over and do more in-depth screening, like looking at intraocular pressure, slit lamp exam, dilated eye exam. And so that allows us to sort of offer these patients more services than they might have gotten elsewhere. We've been fortunate enough to have a great partnership with our local Lions Club. We were both officers in our Lions Club, and that sort of gave us a good connection there. They have graciously allowed us to borrow their equipment trailer every month. It's got a slit lamp, auto refractor, four octo, everything. So it's been great. And unfortunately, that was not sustainable in the long term, because we didn't want to strain our relationship with them, because someone has to come and sit there for the 4 hours that night while we're using the equipment. And so Jessica has secured a donation from Lombard Instruments that we are finalizing now, where we're going to have all of our own clinic equipment for ophthalmology screenings. So that should definitely help us to be able to see more patients. We might be able to expand to another clinic night, since we're currently doing it once a month. So in the first 9 months of our clinic, we have seen 38 patients and distributed 29 pairs of glasses. We've been able to refer 7 patients out for glaucoma referrals. And that has offered our patients something that they were not able to get. One of our patients had previously been told he had glaucoma about 15 years ago, had drops for 4 years, and they couldn't afford them, so just stopped. And because he had normal eye pressures, they told him he probably didn't have glaucoma. It was just a fake diagnosis, pretty much an error, a misdiagnosis. And so he came into our clinic, and we noticed that he had increased cupping on his eye exam, and sent him for a referral. And after he had the OCT scan, it had very significant damage. So we were able to get him surgery through one of our contacts, Dr. Nachtwar, and so that is a way that we've been able to sort of help with some of this population. We've done some retina specialist referrals, as well as cataract surgery referrals. Even without those surgeries or specialist visits, this is saving each patient about $214 for just the basic eye exam and glasses. So the big lessons we've learned is there's extraordinarily low health literacy in our population. Many of those with a family history of glaucoma or personal history of diabetes or hypertension were unaware these could affect their eyesight. We've had patients who had several family members with glaucoma come in just because they thought maybe they'd come in with their family members. They weren't seeing quite as well, but they had no idea, and they ended up being glaucoma suspects that we referred over. The biggest vision care barriers in this population are, as Dr. Missing just discussed, cost and access and poor understanding of the visual health care risk factors. In our population, our most frequently diagnosed problems have been glaucoma and cataracts, although we have seen some diabetic retinopathy and
other diseases, but yeah. One of the things that we found that went beyond the numbers that we had here is we experienced a really unique thing with our patients where we had a couple patients come in and we only gave them glasses. We expected to find more and we didn't. They really actually didn't have that much wrong with them. They could have even gone to Walmart and essentially gotten glasses for $50. We didn't even really give them that much of a service. And we had patients that just bawling, crying, hugging us and saying, nobody has listened to me. No one has seen me. Everyone has assumed that I am here with no insurance because of a mistake I've made or something that I've done wrong. And so what we really got out of this, not only was education for our students and opening their eyes to a sector of a population that they don't normally see, which is really important to educate future medical professionals, but we got to actually address some underlying concerns with the patients, just validating that what they have, their situation is not their fault and that people are here and people are trying to make it better and that we're trying to educate our students that this is a problem and we're trying to expand. And we've really noticed just an increase in appreciation from those patients, and we've kind of formed a bond between our community and our medical school that has allowed us to be more community focused, which is something that we really think is important, you know, for future medical professionals to understand that it's not just medicine and numbers. A lot of times it's the people in a community. And Norfolk, Virginia is not a community that one would necessarily point to on a map and say, I bet that area is high risk. It's in the middle of Northern Virginia. There's not that, if you look at the surrounding areas, there actually isn't that much poverty, but when you really get down to Norfolk, Virginia, it's a really high risk population. Everyone's quick to jump to the big cities, Detroit, Cleveland. You don't necessarily realize that a lot of times your community that you're living in might be high risk, and just outside your back door, there might be patients that are in need. Everyone's really quick to go to Haiti and go outside the United States when we found that our biggest need was literally right outside my door, 1 mile away from my house. And so it was really, that's something we learned as students that was really invaluable and we can't really present in numbers. Thank you.
Question?
So what's your next steps, your vision for it? You got this started, it sounds phenomenal.
Yes. Well, we want to increase, we have a patient list that's almost 150 patients long. We cannot get patients in quickly enough. So the biggest jump for us was getting that equipment. Now that we have it in-house, we can expand nights. And our regular clinic runs twice a week. We're hoping to initially jump to 2 times a month and then eventually get to weekly. The real strain was trucking in the equipment. It took a bunch of students about an hour to set up all our equipment every single night. And it took a Lions Club representative to sit for 5 hours, just sit and wait for it. So that was our big stopping point. And now that we've gotten that, I think we can just really expand and try to get those patients flowing. We're trying to set up a referrals process between other clinics and other communities, because like you pointed out before, a lot of people have insurance but don't have vision insurance.
Right.
And so people think, oh, I'm insured, I'm healthy. But that doesn't mean you are. It doesn't mean you don't need glasses. And a lot of people don't understand that prescriptions are actually a unique thing. You'd be surprised that we have patients coming in saying, oh, I borrow my sister's glasses. I'm like, well, that doesn't do anything for you. You can't borrow someone's glasses unless they happen to be, you know, the one person that's actually kind of close to you. So we're hoping to expand into education as well, because our patients are just not aware of what's going on.
So you guys are wonderful, and it's so exciting to see that as medical students that you care about the service you're doing for people who have difficulty accessing it. I commend you on that. But the question I have is, how do you make it a sustainable program, because you guys are going to move on?
Yes, so we were officers in our Lions Club at EVMS in our chapter, and we've kind of worked a process of handing it down. We have really invested officers in the younger classes, and by hooking it up with the current HOPES model, which has been sustainable for several years and utilizes a medical student education as the push for it, because as everyone in here knows, it's much harder to say, give me money to do something in the community. Our school will fund medical education till the end of time. And so by hooking it up in a junior and senior clinician model and kind of making the funding focus be medical education, it's really pushed it along. We've been allowed to do everything that we've done under this umbrella of increasing medical education, which we are, because ophthalmology, which Haley is going into, is a really competitive field and there's not a lot of access to that for students. So we've kind of dovetailed two different kind of impetuses and gotten two different results out of it. Yes.
For those patients who required additional ophthalmic care that could
be on site. Did they actually attend those appointments that you were making?
Some of them.
Yeah.
We've had some transportation issues, but the doctor, one of them volunteers with us as a clinician, and he's been very good about trying to continue to make contact and try to get them there, but it is a problem.
Yeah, we're trying to, our show rate is low because a lot of times patients don't have a way to get to clinic or last second things come up and everyone has, you know, problems at home that we're not all aware of. So we've been really trying to hook it up with other services like free rides and getting people to their appointments. But all of the surgeries that they're referred to are covered. So if we can just get a sustainable way to get our patients showing up and getting them there, they will get the care they need.
From what you're describing, from what I understood, and again, it was phenomenal, it's not necessarily that there's a lack of care, it's more a lack of money to pay for what may already exist. Because you described some situations where they could have refused from the basic care.
Well, the problem is like Parks Place exists, but money's not going to make that happen more frequently or going to make a physician show up because it is run on a volunteer basis.
You talked about that they could have gone to a clinic in Walmart?
Oh, well, you can get glasses, you just can't get the prescription. So the biggest thing here is you can't get a prescription, you can't get a dilated eye exam. So for a patient that doesn't have any further eye disease and just needs a pair of glasses, yes, they can go and they can do that. And the cost, which they might not be able to afford personally, is not technically that high. The real impact here are the patients that have no access to a dilated eye exam. We've had patients that have come in that said that they have been calling the Lyon Center for years, years and years and years, saying, I have family members that have this chronic eye problem. I know my vision is getting worse. I know it's there. I really, really need help. And there's no one to see them.
I'm kind of confused because I heard a description earlier about a program that was actually set up in Walmart, so your Walmart has no eye exam.
When we looked at our situation when we started the clinic in January, the only available places for a dilated eye exam was the Parks Place and the Center for Sight. Yes. Right now we're working with referrals because of the way the HOPES Clinic is set up under EVMS. We're hoping to expand through the Lions Club to be able to solicit outside physician help, but currently under the rules of EVMS and student engagement, we're only allowed to work off of certain physician referrals.
And we have been able to get some referrals recently from a mobile-free clinic out in the community, and so that's brought us some other patients.
We have to bring each situation to EVMS as an organization on a case-by-case basis, and they work with us very well, but it's kind of limited how we can expand in multiple directions at the same time.
So you mentioned mobile free clinic. We do in Hawaii have now Project Vision, which put all the equipment you're trying to acquire into a mobile van, and it's working very well. It goes to the senior centers and screening. Mm-hmm. That may be a way for superior.
That's the Lions Club. We have the Lions Club of Virginia has that mobile trailer, and that's what we've been utilizing. But it's one trailer for the whole state, and so we were sucking it up once a month, and it was limiting the options that they could do. So for like our clinic, we don't see pediatric patients, and a lot of the Lions Club initiatives are pediatric patients. So we were taking that time when they could have been at a school and using it for, which was great. Our patients needed it, but now that we have equipment, we've allowed freed up that trailer to go to the. Of all the initiatives that they have in place as an organization.